I'm flinging myself into spring cleaning.
I'm going to fling into spring at Total Wine and clean up on Chardonnays and fruit-flavored vodkas at low prices.
Wondrous selection, helpful guides, always low prices. Total Wine and more.
Hi, this is Kylie Thompson, host of Food for Thought. Thanks for listening to the following podcast on Public House Media.
Strike three, you're out.
Welcome back to Caught Listening, the baseball show that goes beyond the white lines. Christian Heimel here with you, broadcasting as part of the Public House Media Network. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, Google and Apple Play, Spreaker and Stitcher.com. Of course, you can find us on Spotify and publichousemedia.org. You can also be a part of the show. Send us your tweets, Instagram messages, Facebook, or even email Caught Listening by Public House Media. Just search that and you will find us. Your questions or your topic suggestions for the show. One of the topics that we've been discussing over the last month now, this is part four of our four-part series, and much like a concert, the headliner goes last. I've been wanting to do this for a while. I've known him for a couple of years now, but someone that I'm really excited to talk to because I think he's got a great baseball mind, but also it brings a different perspective because our last three conversations have been with a baseball analyst, a baseball manager, and a baseball hitter, and now we get to finally talk to a pitcher, not just any pitcher, but the 1987 World Series MVP, the 1988 Cy Young Award winner in the American League, Sweet Music himself, Mr. Frank Viola. Frank, appreciate the time, pal.
Always good talking to you, Christian.
So let's start with this, because this was brought up, this again, part four of our four-part series here, and in part one, we were talking with the baseball writer Anthony Castrovince of MLB Network and MLB.com, and I asked him where fans' perceptions of these rules are, where he believes fans' perceptions of a lot of these unwritten rules, and his response kind of intrigued me in the sense that he feels most of these unwritten rules, at least fans perceive most of these unwritten rules, are designed to protect a pitcher's ego. As someone who spent so many years in the majors, and you have to be locked in, and the mound can sometimes be the loneliest place in the sports world, your initial thoughts when you hear something like these rules are designed to protect a pitcher's ego?
Yeah, that's a typical guy who probably never stepped on the mound in front of 55,000 people and realized, you know, the situation that you're in. You know, everybody's got egos, Christian. I mean, plain and simple. The only thing is a starting pitcher, specifically a starting pitcher, can only have an ego once every 5 days. So when you get the ball in a 162-game schedule and you're fortunate to get the ball 35 starts, you got to make the most of those 35 starts. So, yes, you take major pride in going out there and doing that. And on top of that, everything starts with the starting pitcher, Brios. He's got the ball in his hand. So if he wants to call it an ego thing, you know, I can understand that. I get it. But there are other stuff that, especially in today's game, and this is where we'll probably get into in a few minutes, but in today's game, all these rules are there to protect the hitters. We don't have, you know, if a pitcher comes near a guy, a.k.a. Joe Kelly, which I'm sure you'll bring up in a couple of minutes, but he gets tossed for, you know, a third of the season, basically, you know, for a pitch that anybody in baseball would have done the same thing if he had the nerve to do that.
Right.
And ego does come into play. It does come into play, but you know what? It's a good thing to have.
Well, it certainly is, and it's also kind of a pride factor because, like you mentioned, for a starting pitcher, you only get that opportunity once every 5 days. And there is a certain thing, call it gamesmanship, call it mutual respect, whatever it may be. There are those certain aspects of the game on any side of things that have certainly, the lines have been blurred between gamesmanship, let the kids play, respect, whatever that is, over the last couple of decades.
No question. And I think it's because, first and foremost, the history of the game in today's generation pretty much got thrown out the window. They don't understand, they don't ask questions of the managers, coaching staff, the older players, the veterans. They're doing their own thing. They think the world circulates around the kids, and that's the way the public treats them. That's the media. That's everybody else. Agents, oh, my God, the agents take care of these kids like nobody else. Mm-hmm. So I get it, but I think what you need to do is if you really want to go back to the basics, Christian, you go back and you have a seminar, and you bring all these young kids in. You have some veteran ball players come in, explain the game, unwritten rules and all, as to how to respect that game. I mean, more important than unwritten rules is when you ask a kid in today's generation about a player that played 10 years ago, they go, who? They don't know. They don't care about the history of the game. And that's what I loved more than anything about the game of baseball, was learning the game of baseball. So, I mean, there is your blur, the blur right there. And then you have to make the adjustment going accordingly.
I think the interesting part, too, is not only in the fact that, you know, the history of the game or the player mindset in today's game has changed, but also the way that a game is pitched has changed tremendously from the time that you were playing to the time now. And you brought it up a couple moments ago, the inside pitch. And that is something that, you know, like I didn't play baseball at a high enough level to really converse about this, but you always have to be wary of the inside pitch. You have to be, and if you crowd a plate, you're going to get it. I mean, just look at the movies, like, for example, For Love of the Game, Bull Durham, and any of those baseball movies, there's a moment.
Even that one scene in Field of Dreams.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. You know, expect low away, but look out for In Your Ear. You know, that's the exact lines. But, like, so, I mean, because you've seen this, and you're not just a former player, you've been a pitching coach in affiliated baseball, now in independent baseball as well. As you've progressed, and you've even coached at the high school level, as you've progressed on in your baseball career, where have you seen that kind of, the way you attack a strike zone and the way pitchers pitch a game, where have you seen that change over the last few decades?
Well, I remember one pitch in specific that really dictated my answer to what you just asked me, and that was Pedro Martinez was pitching for the Montreal Expos. You might remember this. You were a younger kid, but he had a no-hitter going, and he hit a guy in, like, the eighth inning. And the guy took offense to getting hit by the pitch. And all of a sudden, you know, they're chirping back and forth. And it's like, wait a second, he's got a no-hitter going, or a perfect, whatever the case may be, and you're going to chew him out for hitting you on a pitch on the inside. When the hitters started wearing protection, you knew something was going on. Hitters think that they own the whole plate. What they don't understand, and if you went back to the Bob Gibson era and the Don Drysdale era and all those guys, they didn't care. They didn't give a hoot who you were. They were going to drop you in a second just to make a point that this is my part of the plate. Respect it. That's where the game's gone. The umpires have let it get away with it. Major league offices with their suspensions and stuff like that. It's just gotten to the point where I think they don't want to see an injury of a major variety, because in defense of today's game, 95 to 100 miles an hour is commonplace, but they don't have a clue where the ball's going.
Right.
For me, it was a vital pitch just to set up what I needed to set up for my next pitch or pitches. But I had the command to be able to make that pitch. If I'm going to miss and hit somebody, I'm going to miss and hit somebody in the ribs or in the leg. I'm not going to hit them in the face.
Right.
And that's what today's game is scary of, because these kids, it's like that the slap shot in Mighty Ducks where he hits the net once every 3 to 5 shots, whatever it was.
Yep.
Today's pitcher, if you tell today's pitcher with no hitter there to throw 10 pitches in the middle of the plate of the guys who throw 95-plus, I bet you they can only hit it 5-6 times out of 10 with no hitter there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's got to protect the hitters to a certain extent, just for the fact of the possible long-term injury effect.
You brought up an interesting point. We're talking with Frank Viola, the former Minnesota Twin professional baseball player and World Series MVP, Cy Young Award winner. The umpires on this and the players wearing the big, you know, I mean, Barry Bonds looked like he was wearing Captain America's shield on his elbow most days when he was out there. But
you're right.
The umpires, that inner half of the plate, that's still a strike. And you and I have watched baseball games together where a pitch that's clearly on the inner half of the plate is called a ball because the hitter is crouching and so far over the plate that it looks like it's going to hit him. And the umpire is more concerned about the hitter getting hit as opposed to the pitcher being able to get in the strike zone.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing. And the other thing is umpires don't have as, I think today's umpire, and there are a lot of veteran umpires still in the game who I think have made changes accordingly to make everything right. But there are some umpires in the game that don't have a feel for the game. Mm-hmm. You know, was that pitch done on purpose on the inner half? Was that accidental? We got to stop this and make sure that there's a warning on both sides, all that kind of stuff. I guess we could use it for hitters, pitchers, umpires, coach, everybody. The feel of the game has changed over the years more than anything.
And I think a lot, and this is a completely different topic, but I think a lot of that has to go back to the marketing of baseball and, you know, chicks dig the long ball and all that stuff that happened in the late 90s with the steroid era and the home run race between Maguire and Sosa. But
saved the game, Christian.
It certainly did. But I mean, and that's where you see a lot of this stuff. I want to ask you, too, because I think this is a big part of it, too, when you look at it, is certain players have mean streaks, and pitchers are no different in that sense. I mean, we talk about Nolan Ryan. You talk about Max Scherzer now, who, I mean, Scherzer, I feel like he, you know, on a day that he's pitching, I feel like he just hates everybody who's not in his own uniform, and maybe even he hates some of the guys in his own uniform that day. But for you, when you're going out there when you were pitching and you get out there and it's your day to start, it's your ball, and you come out of the bullpen and you get onto the mound for the first time in that game, and whether it's the top or the bottom of the first inning, where is your head at from – I know it's not thinking about, is some guy going to show me up, but what's your process like as you're going through a game in terms of, you know, those unwritten rules starting to potentially toe the line and potentially get broken?
Well, to start a game, you know, that's the furthest thing from your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, first thing first is just getting settled and trying to get into a good groove right from the get-go. I think what happens is, you know, the course of the game will dictate what, you know, how that comes into effect. You know, I didn't have too many no-hitters past the fifth inning in my career, but, you know, if it's the sixth inning, I got a no-hitter going, and the leadoff batter decides to try to drop the bunt down for the first hit, I'm going to remember that. That's in the back of my mind. That guy is going to get drilled eventually. You know, maybe not that game, but the next time I see him, a couple of times later, I will pay him back for that. That's an unwritten rule of baseball. You know, I had a situation, and I'll bring it up because I know you're going to bring it up, but in the 87 World Series in Game 4, I gave up a three-run homer to a massive power-hitting third baseman by the name of Tom Wallace, who in his career, I think, had three home runs, but one of which was in the limelight in the game in the World Series. And he was one of the first guys that did a bat flip. And if you go back on YouTube and see that bat flip, that was an impressive bat flip.
And I'm glad you were, because I've known you for almost 2 years, and this has been the one question I've been wanting to ask you in those 2 years. That's game 4, correct, in Minnesota?
Correct.
Game 4
St. Louis.
Okay, so game 4 in St. Louis, and Lawless at this point in his career has had one, maybe two home runs. And not only does he carry the bat all the way down to first base and then flip it, but it barely gets into the second row. Like, it's not as if Jose Bautista put it into the next, you know, orbital system. But, like, where's your mind in that sense? And does the World Series, the playoffs, you know, division, like how do things change based off of the scenario that you're in? Do they change based off the scenario that you're in?
Well, yes, it did in that scenario, because what happened was I didn't see it. After I made the pitch, I watched it go. I don't watch too many homers, but that was a key spot in the game, and I just wanted to see it. Because I didn't think he got it all, but I knew he hit it well. Anyway, I did not see the actual bat flip and all that stuff. At the end of the inning, after I came out of the game, they told me what had happened. So, you know, I looked at the replays, realized what he did. He didn't do it on purpose. He didn't do it to show it up. It was spur of the moment type thing. But it is in that, based on what we're talking about, the unwritten rule, it is showing somebody up in a specific way. So, in answer to your question, would I have been able to get him back? I would have 100%, but I'm not going to do it in Game 7. I faced him two or three times in Game 7. I'm not going to risk it in a close ball game in Game 7 of a World Series to pay a guy back for what he did, you know. Kudos to him for what he did, but if I would have seen him the following year in a regular season game, that first pitch, I would have dropped him. and he would have known, and as professional as he was, because I got to know him a little bit later on in our careers, he's a nice guy. He said, you know what, I was ready, even in game 7, to take one for the team. But I'm like, you know what, you're not, you know, no, with all due respect, you're not good enough for me to put you on base again, you know, in that scenario. So, you know, The Bautista thing, spur of the moment, but my God, pretend like you've hit a homer before. That's a guy you're talking about who has 200, 300-plus home runs.
Right.
That happens quite often. Be a professional there. Lawless, I get more than anything because, as you mentioned, two home runs in his whole career in a big spot in the World Series. I get that better than I do with the Bautista one.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because given the scenario, I mean, a lot of people, the biggest bat flips that I could think of over the last couple of years, or really, honestly, the three biggest bat, I don't want to say bat flips, but like when I think of showing a pitcher up, I think of, you know, Bautista number one. I think of, you know, Manny Ramirez, where he hits it and then just throws his hands up in the air, is, you know,
yeah.
I think that was 2007, I think, it, or 2004 for the Red Sox, whatever it was. But then, you know, Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis, all these young guys, the let the kids play thing that's been going on. But then, for some reason, this creeps into my mind, Fisk's home run in the 77 World Series, hopping down the first baseline, begging it to go fair. I don't know if that, like, based on today's rules, I mean, maybe, where would that fall in the line of showing somebody up? Or is that just, you know, spur of the moment, World Series, big spot, kind of, you know, emotions getting the better of you?
I think that's totally different from the other scenarios that you're talking about, just for the fact that he was not trying to show anybody up. He was just praying that the ball would go fair.
Yeah.
And you look back at it, that's a pretty cool scenario, watching him begging the ball to stay fair.
Yeah.
That I don't see falling in the same category as the other ones. But, you know, we make the pitch, granted, and we deserve, you know, more power to the guys for hitting the ball out and stuff. But I guess what it ultimately turns out to be professional. There's professionalism there. Mm-hmm. And pretend like you've done it before. I mean, Fernando Tatis, you know, they're letting him get away with something that I think is disgraceful, from the standpoint that he had a father that played the game. His father knew the game. He was the old-time guy. Fernando Jr. got brought up the right way. I know that. When you have an 8-run lead on a 3-0 count, I don't care who, even in today's game, you've got to have an understanding that you just don't swing at a 3-0 pitch in that scenario. So acting stupid like he did, it's like Ozzie Guillen getting thrown out of a game one time, and he's been in the States for 30 years, knows English better than anybody, and he says, no comprende, when they were asking him, well, what was going on there? You know, it's just one of those things that just bugs me, because he knows better. The other stuff, spur of the moment stuff, I could live with, but that one's more irritating than any, just for the fact that, you know, that's like stealing a base with an 8-run lead in the 8th inning.
Yeah.
That you just don't do.
You know, it's interesting, too, because they're this year, 2020, it has been obviously a strange year to begin with, but when you look at it, not only the Tatis Grand Slam up, I think, up 6 or up whatever it was in the 8th inning, whatever it was, but then, I think it was just last week, you had Adam Duvall with the Braves up like 20, hits a Grand Slam late in the game. I mean, I think where a lot of people and a lot of fans, I know this because it comes from a lot of fans, and this is where I think a lot of people take exception for some reason, is this idea of, well, make a better pitch. Well, okay, yes, you can make a great pitch, but if there's a good enough hitter, or if he gets a good enough swing on it, you can't really control what happens after that.
Correct. And you know what? 20-run lead, 10-run lead, you still got to get your numbers. And if you're going to throw a pitcher out there who's going to throw a ball down the middle of the plate, take advantage of it. I mean, Dom Smith had his 3-0 home run off of Anthony Kay the other day in Toronto with like a 4-run lead. But, I mean, he laid a pitch right there. He'd thrown like 8 balls in a row or something along those lines. Now, that is a shame on the pitcher. It's a shame on it. But that's the game today, Christian. The game today is so different from when I got brought up. I mean, working for a run, hitting behind the run and moving them over, getting him in. One run doesn't count anymore. It doesn't work anymore. It's got to be a 3-run homer or a strikeout. That's what they're living and dying by. But, I mean, that's what analytics is bringing to the table. That's where the change of the game has become so drastic that us older guys just shaking our head going, wait a second, what happened to the basic format of good, smart baseball? It's not there anymore.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, last week we spoke with Tyler Ladendorf, a guy you know pretty well, and we asked him about the Fernando Tatis home run, and he brought up an interesting point that I don't think is being discussed enough. Tatis is on still that rookie contract. He's still getting paid a very small amount, despite being one of the more talented and exciting players in the game. And him swinging at that, it's going to get some backlash, or it's going to get a lot of publicity because of the situation. But that one home run, those 4 RBIs, that increase to the batting average is what's going to help him make the Bryce Harper money in a couple of years. If baseball had a salary cap, if baseball wasn't giving exorbitant amounts of money, $300, $400, $500 million to their stars, do you think that maybe that level of respect, that level of gamesmanship would come back because guys aren't trying to get their numbers solely for that hopeful big payout?
No.
Okay.
No. Nope. Just for the fact that one home run and four RBIs for Fernando Tatis 4 years from now, 6 years from now, when he's arbitration eligible and free agent eligible, ain't going to make a damn bit of better difference because he's that good. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was one of these 24, 25 players now with a home before RBIs, that might help him maintain a spot and be able to establish something down the line. Now, I understand what Tyler's saying. I get that. But your first 3 years, up until arbitration eligibility, you could hit 50 homers and drive in 150 wins. You're not going to get swat because the club owns you. I mean, look at Peter Alonso with the Mets. He had 53 homers last year. Guess what? He signed for what the Mets told him he's going to sign for. But he'll pay them back down the line unless he hits 200 like he's hitting this year, but you know, it's a point that I would listen to, but I don't accept just for the fact that the type of player Tatis is that wouldn't make a bit of difference 3 to 6 years from now, because he's going to be one of the highest paid players as long as he stays healthy, regardless of what he does. So play the game the right way, and he could be the trendsetter for future as far as teaching these younger players maybe how to play the game the right way. So everybody comes together and does it the right way. Maybe that's the better point that we should bring it up.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. You're not wrong in that sense. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're talking with Frank Viola, 1987 World Series MVP and 88 Cy Young Award winner with the Minnesota Twins. It's exciting. Don't get me wrong. Like I part of me loves the flair that some of these guys play with. Part of me loves the fact that Major League Baseball is allowing guys to have personalities. But at the same time, you're right. There's a certain level of respect to the game more than anything else. And I'm interested to get your thoughts on this because I've asked this to everybody who's been a part of it. 2020, if not for a pandemic, was going to be the year of the Astros retaliation tour because of what they did and what they were, you know, found to be doing and everything that happened in the offseason with regards to their 2017 World Series. Something like that. Something like Jim Bouton with ball four and the book that comes out, as opposed to swinging 3-0 or when up big, where there's a disrespect within the game and then there's disrespect to the game. How would you handle those two separate scenarios if you were pitching in a day like today? And this kind of leads into the Joe Kelly question, but how would you react to something if you were playing today and Alex Bregman steps up to the plate after what transpired this offseason?
Oh, boy, that's a question that I could probably go on and on about for like an hour. I guess I'll establish the groundwork right now. I think Houston should have been so suspended, fined, give back the trophy, give back your World Series money. I mean, this is Shoeless Joe keeping him out of the Hall of Fame type of scenario. That's cheating at its worst. That's a golfer taking a ball, marking his golf ball 3 inches in front of his coin to get that edge over somebody else. It is the worst thing. Nothing compared to what we talked about prior to this comes close to what they did. I mean, it's horrible that Manfred, of course, doesn't understand the game. That's the type of commissioner he is. He's a lawyer. He doesn't understand baseball. He's a terrible commissioner. And letting it get away with everybody involved should have something, should pay a consequence for that. All right. That's my feelings on that. Mm-hmm. Now going forward, what Joe Kelly did showed more. It's what everybody wants to do, but too chicken to do. Let's put it that way. Everybody in Houston who is buying, and I know Cora's taking front of it. And I know that Carlos Beltran's taking a little bit. And I know that Hinch is taking a little bit, but that's like a slap in the wrist. I mean, everybody involved, it's just so bad. They should all be out of the game. If you could just take a team and throw them out of the game, ban them, that's what I would have done. I mean, honestly, Christian, you know the game better than anybody. That's just a total disrespect for the game of baseball, and that is just in itself just I can't even go on with that. But but to answer your question, I'll get off my pedestal there and just answer your question. I would pick a guy. Older guys would do this. They'd pick a guy that night and hit him 3 times. and the next night hit somebody else three times. If that's what's, you know, what's going to have to do, that's what you're going to have to do. I mean, to be able to walk around, and the worst part about the whole thing, Christian, is there was not a sincere apology amongst anybody for what they did, and I think that really hurts more than anything.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's why a lot of people were completely okay with what Joe Kelly did. And the, you know, obviously Joe Kelly's intent is not to end somebody's life or potentially end somebody's career throwing like that. But his intent is to show everybody that, listen, what you guys did was wrong. And the fact that you literally, you got off scot-free is the bigger issue. I thought it was incredible that, like, I don't remember who it was. It might have been Barstool Sports that as soon as Joe Kelly's suspension was announced, Joe Kelly becomes the first player suspended for the Astros cheating scandal. That in and of itself was the problem behind all of that, more than anything else, 100%.
I agree. And you know, it should never have to come down to Joe Kelly getting suspended for what baseball should have done in the first place.
Right. So then let me ask you this then, because I think this is where everybody, when you have issues with pitchers throwing at guys, it comes down to two things, I think. Number one is where you throw. You know, Chapman did it to, I can't remember the guy's name from Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago, and then he promptly the next night had two home runs. And then Joe Kelly going at Bregman and Correa's head, that I think is the biggest problem that a lot of fans have, is throwing at somebody's head, especially when guys now are throwing 95 to 100. The second one, we'll get into the second one in a minute, but you know, you're throwing at somebody's head. You know, I think that's where a lot of people have the biggest issue, is the fact that if you're going to hit somebody, fine, but square them up in the back or square them up in the hip.
But then we go back to the issue I brought up 15 minutes ago. The command is not there. They can't command their pitches. So that's what makes it really scary. I hit one guy in the head in my career. I hit Brady Anderson in the head in Camden Yards. And Christian, it was the scariest moment in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't mean to do it. Honestly, it got away. But when you see a guy get hit in the head, you'll think seconds about, you know, you'll have second thoughts about ever trying to do that or make a point up there. So to answer your question, you go with the legs, you go at the hip, you go at the back. Burt Blyleven, quick story. Burt Blyleven had Ron Hassie as his catcher in Cleveland. And catchers, for some reason, no pitchers better than anybody because they catch them. Mm-hmm. So when Hassie got traded, Burt faced him, and Hassie got three line drive base hits off of him. Next game, he got two more base hits. So Burt finally came up to him one night, and I was standing there in the outfield. He goes, "You get a hit off me tomorrow. Next pitch, I'm going to drill you in the knee." Period. Hassie thought he was joking because they were good buddies and stuff. First time up, he got a line drive base hit to right center field. Next time up, first pitch, drilled him right in the kneecap. Ended up going on the DL, missing 3 weeks of the season, and Burt went up to him when he was laying at the plate, holding his knee, and he said, "I warned you." That's it. But, I mean, that's a guy who liked command, you know, but and he's a Hall of Famer, so you respect him. But, I, you know, Roger Clemens is one that comes to mind as far as not being afraid to knock somebody down. Look at the Piazza situation, but, you know, all that stuff. But, I mean, there's a certain respect, Randy Johnson, you know, his command was all over the place, but my God, when he made a point of coming inside, you remembered that. We'll go right back to the beginning of our conversation. There's a place where inside pitches are effective, but please, dear God, stay away from the head. That I 100% agree with. But with the command of today's game, with 95 to 100, just throwing it as hard as you can, that's hard to ask of.
Yeah, it is, especially when, you know, especially when you've got a guy like, you know, guys like Chapman who again can throw 103, and sometimes you really honestly don't know where it's going. Matt Barnes for the Red, Craig Kimbrell was one of those guys, his slider, you had no idea where it was going more often than not. That brings me to the second part of this, is the level of respect, and we see this a lot in basketball, we see it in football, the veteran guys, the superstars, they get the favorable call, whatever it is.
Yep.
The level of respect, and it's weird to use the term respect in this sense. For example, you know, a guy like, nothing against him, but let's say DJ LeMahieu gets intentionally plunked, you know, for the Yankees. Well, and it's against the Red Sox. Well, they're probably going after JD Martinez. They're not going after, you know, Christian Vasquez. They're not going after, you know, Zhuwei Lin, some younger guy. They're going after your superstar. So,
right.
You know, let me ask it this way. What does that is there even a conversation like that? Like, when you were playing, if you're, you know, because you had a chance to play with Kirby Puckett. If Kirby gets intentionally drilled, or not Kirby, but like let's say some, you know, your 25th guy on the roster gets thrown at for you, for your Twins, and you're on the hill, is there even a conversation, or what does it look like in that scenario in terms of retaliation, quote unquote? Does it go just to the next guy, or does it go to the next superstar guy?
That's a great question, Christian. And I guess the best answer I have for you is it might never get to that situation. The 25th guy gets hit on purpose. You might look at your teammates, and they might just, you know, without saying any words, say, just let it go. Just let it go. You know, because what happens is if you plunk somebody on the other team, that's going to start a war. And the next thing you know, your best player is going to hit. Or you're going to get hit before you get a chance, and they're going to put the warning out and all that other stuff. The worst, I'll even take it one step further than the question you asked. If I were on the mound and I'm just pissed and I just want to hit somebody, just to vent, I could start, and I've seen some teammates do this, where they walk, say I hit somebody on purpose, and I walk back into the dugout at the end of the inning. You would not believe how many hitters are going to come up. You go, what in the hell were you thinking? Now we are petrified of coming up to the plate hitting because of your stupidity, because of your anger. So, yeah, they're petrified. Anytime a hitting situation, a plunk occurs, everybody's scared of the ramifications of what that could bring about. So to answer your question, Doc Gooden got hit against the Philadelphia Phillies. He was pitching a real good game, and he got drilled for some reason. He was at the plate, and he got drilled. Well, he went back out. He took that four-hitter, and he hit him himself. You know, he took the responsibility, you know, and everybody had his back because he was Doc Gooden at that time.
Right.
But, yeah, the scenarios dictate a lot of the stuff. So if Kirby Puckett got hit, you sure as hell know that we are going to retaliate in a second on their best player without hesitation. Now, there are other times that you might just say, you know what, everybody's watching. Let's just wait till maybe next series. We have another series. We'll go back and we'll look it over again at that time. So there are, you always have opportunities to retaliate, but it doesn't necessarily have to mean right then, right now.
And we've seen that with this Yankees-Rays rivalry that's been budding over the last couple of seasons now. It doesn't always happen the very next inning or the very next game, even for that matter. So, Frank, at this point in time, we like to have the listeners ask us some questions and get your thoughts on them. First one here comes from Derek. What is a bigger way to show up a pitcher, admiring a home run or bunting late to break up a no-hitter?
Well, they both stink. From a pitcher standpoint, they both stink. But I guess it's how you admire the home run. I mean, as I said, if a Tom Lawless who has two home runs in his whole, and I gave up a whole bunch of home runs to guys who didn't have a lot of home runs in their career. But, you know, if they're going to enjoy the moment, you know what, more power to you. But, you know, you go overboard, you're going to have to pay for it down the line. What really would irk me, though, is as I said earlier, if I have a no-hitter in the 6-7th inning, a guy lays down a bunt for the first hit of the game, that would really bother me more than anything, just for the fact that I want somebody to be able to earn that first base hit. Go up there, swing that bat like you're supposed to, get that first base hit off of me by swinging the bat. Don't do it because, you know, it's the easy way of getting on base. Unless, you know, then you got a scenario, too, Chris. The game dictates a lot, too. If it's a 1-0 game, that's a different situation. Now we have to think that through. But if it's 4-5-0 and you're doing that, that would bother me more than anything.
Yeah, 100%. Brandon asking this one. You're a coach now, so I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. The Astros and the Athletics a couple weeks ago got into a little bit of a dust-up with one of the assistant coaches chirping at one of the players going down the line. What is a coach's role when it comes to these player disagreements in terms of the unwritten rules now?
Hey, coaches are part of the team. And you know what? Most coaches are older school, and older school guys have a tendency not to be able to shut their mouths, me being one of them. So I would have probably been doing the same thing. And you know, the situation he's referring to was, I think, Alex Sintrod, who played with the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
You know, so he knows a lot of the front office guys over there. You know, it's chirping for baseball's sake, or it's chirping at an individual just because you don't like that individual. And I think it went beyond the baseball to the individual, and that's where you got to be as a coach very careful, because you can't, you know, you're a coach. You're not going to get up to the plate. We can't hit you. You can't do anything about that scenario. Just shut up and let the players handle it when you get to the, when you get to, it's at the individual basis. When it comes to baseball itself, more power to you. Say whatever you want. But if it comes to, you know, a one-on-one situation, coach versus player, coach better shut up because he's going to lose all the time.
Last one here. This one is not about the unwritten rules, but I think it's a good one to ask. A couple of weeks ago, baseball world and really the world in general lost the franchise Tom Seaver. You, growing up on Long Island, you played for the Mets, and I believe your first year with the Mets was the year that his number got retired, correct, at Shea Stadium?
I don't recall that one. I think I just missed that.
So, well, regardless, but putting on that uniform, that Mets uniform, pitching in Shea Stadium where Tom Seaver was, what did he mean to you growing up and then throughout your baseball career and when you finally got to be when you got to be a part of the Mets?
Well, first of all, he was the franchise for a reason. I mean, he made the New York Mets what the New York Mets became, especially at 69. You got to believe team. I mean, he was the key to making all that happen. He was just a great, great pitcher. I heard nothing but wonderful things about him as a person. I know that he had a little shady side where he was a little cold to people, but my scenario with him, I've met him numerous times. He was always good to me. Tom Seaver story was he was at the end of his career, and he's pitching for the Boston Red Sox, and we have a head-to-head matchup on a Friday night in the Metrodome. And segue back, my dad's favorite player when I was growing up was Willie Mays, and after Willie Mays retired, Tom Seaver became his favorite player. So all of a sudden now, Tom Seaver and Frank Viola are pitching against each other, my dad's favorite player and his son. So I flew him out to Minnesota for the game that night. We both went 8 innings. We left the 3-3 tie. We both pitched very well. At the end of the 8th inning, I went into the clubhouses at the Metrodome right next to each other. It was a laundry room intersecting the two rooms. So I asked to talk to Tom. Tom came back there, and I introduced myself again and told him a friend, blah, 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 blah. Told him about my dad. And he goes, and I said, would you please sign this game ball for my dad? I'll have my name and your name together and give it to him. He goes, I got one better for you. At the end of the game, Juan, I walked down to meet your dad. So he went down there, and you talk about the thrill of a lifetime. My dad ended up talking to Tom Seaver for 20 minutes. He was as classy as they came. It was something that I will never, ever forget. I'll cherish it for life. I ran into him numerous times after that scenario when I became a Met, and he remembered that. So, you know, when you're talking about a Hall of Famer, it's great to be able a Hall of Famer on the field, but it's the stuff off the field that people remember, and that's the Tom Seaver I'm always going to remember.
100%, and you know, obviously, we certainly can't wait for the Mets to be able to celebrate him with their fans at Citi Field, hopefully in 2021. Frank, it's been a terrible, terrible year. To be 100% honest, I cannot wait to get back on the course, on the golf course with you, in the dugout with you, and spend some time. But I can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes out and talking with us.
Anytime, Christian. I absolutely can't wait for that day either, buddy.
It's Frank Viola, Minnesota Twins Hall of Famer, 1987 World Series MVP and 88 Cy Young Award winner. Appreciate your guys' questions, especially the Tom Seaver one. We don't talk a lot about headlines on this show, but was glad to get that one to be able to get. That's a great Tom Seaver story and just kind of shows you the caliber of person that he was. That's going to do it for our Baseball's Unwritten Rules series. I don't think this is going away anytime soon, so we will most likely bring this back at some point in the near future. And if you guys want to talk more about it, feel free and join us on social media. Search Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, Caught Listening by Public House Media, or email the show, caughtlisteningphm@gmail.com. You can send us your questions for our next guest. You can send us suggestions for which topics you want us to cover next on the show. You can also find me on Twitter at Chris Heimel, ChrisHeimell. And do not forget to subscribe, rate, review, share us with your friends and family on Spreaker.com, Stitcher.com, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and of course, as always, on publichousemedia.org. Appreciate you guys' time and listening to the show. Thanks so much to Frank Viola. Until next week, you have been caught listening.
Virginia, William Hill, America's number one sportsbook, is now here. and we have a special 2021 offer to help you bet on all your favorite sports risk-free. Download the William Hill Sportsbook app, and when you sign up, you can get started with a risk-free bet of up to $2,021. Use promo code RadioRF.
Terms and conditions apply. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat our confidential and toll-free helpline at 1-888-532-3500.
Let's make it interesting with William Hill Sportsbook.